Well, if it's Wednesday, it's hump day. And if it's hump day, that means we're going to be visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Hey, it's splendid to be on the show.
Hey, I'm glad I've got you here because, you know, we always like to bring you here to the Stash to give people the honest scientific facts behind marijuana and the studies that come out. And there's so many of these reefer madness stories that we have to deal with. And a lot of them seem to be coming from the UK. And I just wanted to get your take on this latest one. I posted on this yesterday about the doctors in Scotland blaming the rise on spending on Viagra on cannabis, saying that more teenage boys and men under 40 are getting Viagra because the dreaded reefers are causing impotence. Is there any sort of medical evidence of that?
Isn't this hilarious how quickly they can jump to this when literally just a few years ago we were hearing about marijuana turning you into a sex fiend?
Yeah.
So it's clearly the most magical drug in the world if it can both turn you into a sex fiend and prevent you from getting an erection. I think what's happened here is maybe a couple of cases where folks under 40 have asked for Viagra and happen to have used cannabis have been very salient in certain physicians' minds, and they tend to see things that are consistent with their biases. So once you see something, you tend to remember the stuff that fits you, so all the other stereotypes that show up in the world, we seem to remember selectively. And then once you really take a good look at the data, you find, no, that correlation's not there at all. The idea that cannabis would be contributing to this isn't pharmacologically impossible. I mean, because there is some vasoconstriction associated with the inhalation of smoke, but it would certainly seem like tobacco, alcohol, other contributors to heart disease, all these other things would be much more likely candidates, particularly in Scotland, where I hate to say it, but the average drinker there would put most drinkers here right under the table. But also the idea that folks under a certain age are requesting Viagra actually because they have erectile dysfunction. I'm afraid to say it, but at least when I was on the West Coast, this was more something folks did to get that fourth and fifth erection of the day
right,
rather than because they were having a problem getting the first one.
Yeah, that's something I had, you know, wanted to take into account here is the use of Viagra as a recreational drug rather than a treatment for ED.
And in fact, you know, the way Viagra works, it's essentially inhibiting something that's preventing all the blood from flowing down there. And the combination with marijuana probably isn't a great idea, as I've mentioned both in my High Times column and in other places. And in truth, if you're paying good attention to how you feel and what's going on, if you're not getting an erection, odds are high there's a reason, and it's a fine reason. And you can explain to your partner that you're having a good time and that this just isn't what's up right now, so to speak. But the bottom line really is that I think it's extremely unlikely, given how frequently folks use cannabis and the base rate of erectile dysfunction in folks at this young age, that there's any variation here at all.
Right. And part of the article here, the doctors had said something about the number of patients being prescribed Viagra is climbing 20% a year in some areas. Wouldn't you have to have a 20% climb in cannabis to kind of even come close to making that claim?
Well, and of course that would be pretty preposterous. But even if there was just a 1% increase in cannabis use, that wouldn't, you know, necessarily mean that these things co-vary in a way that's at all causal. It could very much mean that folks who happen to like recreational drugs of any sort happen to like other drugs for recreational purposes as well.
Yeah, I just think it didn't take into account the idea of people, especially younger people, taking it as an enhancement rather than a treatment. And then, of course, you know, you kind of also mentioned the lifestyle choices. People are more sedentary. Younger people play more video games. They don't get up as much. Bad diets. All of this could be contributing factors in this Viagra prescription.
Well, and in truth, once they've got even some decent correlational data, I'd be willing to entertain at least some alternative explanation for this. But this is just a couple of physicians talking about some observations. And again, we tend to confirm our stereotypes whenever we look out and don't take systematic views of the world.
Well, let's go a little bit meta on this about, you know, just the coverage itself. Like you said, it's just a couple of doctors here in Scotland, not any sort of study, not any sort of scientific background behind this theory of theirs. How is it that the media always brings this to our attention, these little tiny nothing, you know, rants about marijuana that are bad, and yet we'll put together a study that shows the great results with, say, multiple sclerosis or treating cancer or whatever, and it gets barely a mention in the back pages of the newspaper?
Well, it's particularly suspicious given the recent change in classification in the UK, and here we are in Scotland where, you know, those laws are taken into effect. I understand the desire to decrease teen use in any honest way possible, but this is clearly something that's going to become laughable to anybody under a certain age who thinks that this is some kind of effort to minimize their cannabis use. And I hate to say it, it's another one of those situations where we really lose credibility. So underage smokers, you know, folks we don't want to see using cannabis, are going to see something like this, think it's a lie, and then later on, when we have something really important to say about, say, methamphetamine or drugs that are, you know, truly dangerous, they're not going to believe that because we cried wolf in these situations.
Right, right. And let's turn this the other direction, to coin a phrase, I suppose. Is there any sort of reports or studies showing any sort of aphrodisiac benefits of cannabis, that cannabis might actually replace the Viagra in some circumstances? Is there anything to that?
I can imagine there's not a lot of research funding on those kinds of topics.
I'll volunteer.
Yeah, exactly. Halicus and some other researchers in the 70s and 80s have found consistent reports, but only self-reports, of enhanced orgasm, appreciation of your partner, and things along those lines. They didn't ask directly about, you know, can you get it up, but it certainly sort of was implied with this. And, you know, anecdotal evidence is pretty profound on this topic. Obviously, it's going to be a long time before we have funding to bring folks in the lab and actually get to demonstrate this, but I feel like the numbers and the effusiveness of these reports is so overwhelming that it's really hard to dispute.
Well, research funders out there, if you're listening to The Stash, you can send in your funding to stash@normal.org. I'll be glad to take it all and put together a crack study here of the effects of cannabis and sex. We'll see what we can do.
Repeated measures, single sample. Yes.
Well, let's get serious again here. You were talking about teenagers and what they're going to believe or not believe. Of course, everybody's always working to try to keep kids off of cannabis. And the latest salvo from the drug warriors here in this arena has been drug testing in the schools. We just recently got some reports on the increase in drug testing in the, you know, even down to elementary schools. And I thought I'd get some of your thoughts on that as to the effectiveness of this or what's going to be the result from this increase in drug testing.
I'm really flabbergasted by this move. When Pot Politics came out, my student Sarah Smucker Barnwell did a great review of drug testing in the workplace, basically showing that the drug testing doesn't seem to alter drug use in any way, and in fact seems to cost more than it earns and creates this kind of bad atmosphere in the workplace. Now we have data, particularly from really large studies done through Michigan, where surveys show that students who are at schools where there is drug testing are no less likely to use drugs than at schools where there is no such drug testing. So this isn't going to create the result that folks seem to want. And then on top of it, you have all this crazy, you know, ridiculous environmental attitude, if you will, where suddenly students are perceived as potential lawbreakers, as they are the enemy, that they have to do these cumbersome urine screens in situations that make things really difficult with their teachers or whoever's in charge of doing the urine screens, and at incredible expense, when in fact it's also designed to get folks from participating in extracurriculars. So in order to be in an extracurricular, you have to take a drug test. What is one of the best buffers against drug problems in school? Well, it's participation in extracurriculars. Mm. So the folks we want to reach the most and get them involved in alternative activities are the ones who are now going to decline those opportunities because they don't want to be drug tested.
Yeah, it reminds me of the movie Dazed and Confused when the character Pink, you know, the quarterback, is they demand a drug test of him and he refuses to go out for the team because of it. This is going to happen over and over in schools all across the country. You're just going to turn off a certain segment of the population that could most use those extracurricular activities.
The funny thing about it, too, is for the price, there are wonderful drug prevention programs that they could do. I'm happy to fly anywhere and walk through everything in Parents Guide to Marijuana for any of these schools. It's really out there. Some of the data from Steve Sussman's lab at University of Southern California, Marianne Pence. We've got folks in San Francisco with wonderful drug prevention programs that don't require anybody's pee and that would be equally expensive or less than these programs, and they don't have that invasion of privacy, all these problems with constitutionality of this, and what a surprise, it might actually decrease drug problems, whereas this, clearly the data suggests, it doesn't alter use in any way meaningful.
Now, the only thing they're accomplishing through these student drug testing programs, it's a feel-good measure for, you know, a nothing sort of feel-good measure for people to think that they're doing something about it when, like you point out, they're wasting money, time, and maybe even making the situation worse.
The irony is, even just since this article came out about increases in testing, I'm getting more emails about how to pass drug tests. And I'm just really apprehensive that this is going to turn into this crazy two-headed monster of drug testing companies and counter-drug testing companies battling it out, trying to create ways of, you know, basically detecting each other, and essentially all this money is literally going down the drain.
Now, we're seeing it in the workplace for certain. I've had a human resources person tell me one time that the drug test wasn't so much to test if you were on drugs, it was test to see if you were smart enough to pass a drug test.
Oh, that's intriguing.
I guess the idea being that, you know, they know people use marijuana, they know people use drugs. If it's so out of control that you can't quit for 2 weeks or whatever it takes to flush out, that's really what they're searching for. It's, again, a method of controlling people, and it's just very, very frustrating to hear about.
Well, and I'm all for, if people are messing up at school, if students have a bunch of D's, if they're people who are at work who just aren't doing the job, by all means, recommend some kind of remediation for them. But let's base it on a performance, not on the content of your pee.
Right, based on performance. And it's like that court case that went down in Washington State, just north of me, where the presiding judge who had ruled that drug testing all students was unconstitutional under Washington state law, she said if you can't tell there's a drug problem to be solved, there's no need to test. And if you have to test to find if there's a drug problem, then you don't have enough problem. It's kind of a circular argument there.
Well, but it's beautifully put. Cliff Schaefer, a fan of many, has pointed out that there was a time when, you know, people couldn't be discriminated against because of their color or their skin. Now perhaps we can take another step and say you won't be discriminated against because of what's in your urine.
The content of the urine, absolutely. Well, Dr. Earlywine, thanks for joining us here on our Cannabis Science Day. It's always good to talk to you and get the latest information with the real facts behind it.
Oh, it's stellar being on the show. Thanks.